The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, the state's competition watchdog has found several breaches in the retail motor fuel sector. Petrol stations were found not to be displaying their prices as the law requires. And sceptics are urging caution after the government's latest funding boost for the long-delayed Dublin Metrolink. It comes as part of the National Development Plan allocated $2 billion to begin the metro project. Now, joining us to break all it down is transport commentator Conor Faulknan, a consultant to the RIAC. Conor, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. Hi.
Let's talk about price gouging on the forecourt. What did they find?
Well, the CCPC are at least doing their job. That's kind of nice to know. They told us that they were carrying out unannounced inspections across the retail sector, but including forecourt fuel sales. And they say that they did find a number of breaches. Now, it's tightly regulated. You're obliged to display your prices. The lettering has to be at least 10 centimetres tall. It has to be visible. So what you're looking for is a couple of obvious things. Does the price of the till tally with the price displayed? Mm-hmm. That's the most obvious error that could occur. And if errors are happening randomly, 50% of them should be in the consumer's favour. If it's more systematic than that...
But the never in the consumer's favour.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing that you want to check is when I buy a litre of petrol, is it a litre that I'm getting?
Now, the CCP, they don't do that.
No, but there's another government agency that checks that as well.
Revenue, is it revenue?
It's actually revenue because it's customs and excise. And they, if you take excise duty off them, they'll really come after you and make sure they find it. But the CCPC, to be fair, is doing its job. Now, I remember in the AA over the years, we used to always get conspiracy theories from pundits who were absolutely certain that the local service station was ripping them off. And we actually looked at it in as much detail as we could. We never found smoking gun evidence. You know, to be fair to the industry collectively, we never really did.
I mean, there are so many hundreds, if not thousands, of petrol stations across the country. So if they find a few as a percentage, it's relatively small.
Yeah.
But the breaches they might find, one is that the display is not as laid down, or maybe no display at all.
Yes.
Warning the motorist as they approach what they're likely to pay, so they can either drive on or, you know, embrace the price. And then the other thing is that the price as displayed on the big signs is not what's on the pump or on the till.
Yeah, that's right. And it used to be the case when garages physically had to go out and change the lettering. And you could, you know, you literally would send somebody out with a ladder to physically go and change it. And, you know, when that was the setup, you could, you know, sort of give a little bit of a pass if occasionally they got it wrong. But of course, nowadays, they're all point of sale systems that should be perfectly accurately calculated and calibrated. Mm. And the thing about having to wait the law in the consumer's favour is the consumer is tiny and the retailer is large. And if they're systematically, any retailer, if they're systematically going out to take a penny off every consumer invisibly, well, I mean, that's the sort of sinister behaviour that we need the CCPC to police.
And it would mount up, of course.
Oh, of course it would. It's never in worth my while to chase the penny. It's obviously worth their while to rob a penny from everybody. So you have to have checks and balances to make sure that doesn't occur. And as I say, to be fair to the retail fuel industry, about which we got lots and lots of complaints, we never really found systematic evidence of that.
I remember, though, I used to go to a petrol station regularly where there were two brands of fuel. You know, you're using petrol and you get the ordinary petrol and the super duper petrol, which has the same octane rating, maybe 95 or whatever it is, but it has some additive. And you look at the price differential, and there is a price differential, but it promises that it'll go maybe 2% or 5% further.
But
then you find that the price differential is the same, 5%. So what are you getting?
You wonder why you bother. All the engines have to be manufactured to European standard, which means they have to be compatible with the appropriate fuel. So that's 95 grade unleaded and the various specifications for diesel. You don't get much extra benefit for your extra buck there. I wouldn't bother.
Now, let's talk about the National Development Plan. We asked you to have a look at the transport element of it. I mean, it is a huge amount of money that's going to be spent. How well does transport do?
On the face of it, it does very well. Figures are flying around the place, but they're talking about 270 billion euro over a protracted period. But what we really have the window for is the next 10 years, and that's 100 billion in spend, of which transport is getting about 22-23%. And it might even be more than that, depending on how you count it, because it looks as if the first 2 billion for Dublin's metro might actually come out of a bucket that is in theory labelled climate. Now, you know, if you ask me, Pat, I couldn't care less what label they're putting.
Yeah, why are they doing that?
Well, you know,
is it that they have to spend so much money on climate, and if they can squirrel some of that away for metro?
Well, you know, look, this is all for everybody's broader good. If we put a metro in tomorrow, it certainly would be a climate measure. It'd be a bloody good one. So, you know, how do you want to count it? I don't care how they count it. To me, that's kind of optics and spin. What matters is that they're going to spend it. And the other thing that I think a lot of people have said...
Now, $2 billion is not the cost of it.
Oh, no.
This is only the beginning.
This is only the beginning. I mean, ultimately, if the metro is built as envisaged, you're probably talking somewhere between 9 and 12 billion is, you know, the hardest estimates that they have. But we won't even have a solid figure for that for a couple of years' time. But look, we know we need to do it. So let's get on and do it. And it's good to see the money allocated. A couple of cynical things to say. One is that you'd be worn out welcoming announcements. We know we have the cash. That's not news. We know we have a huge list of projects we need to get done. That's not news either. What they have to tell us is how they're going to get these things done faster. How are they going to grasp the planning nettle and actually speed up these projects? I was lucky enough to have a direct chat with Transport Minister Dara O'Brien just last Friday, and we're talking about exactly this. I mean, it doesn't matter how committed you are to Metro. If nothing is making the wheels turn any faster, then it's not going to come any quicker. And I would rather have heard more about that than just be told there's loads of cash. We know there's loads of cash at the moment.
Now, the question of the divvy of transport cash, I mean, there was an argument when Eamon Ryan was the minister that a lot of it went on cycle lanes and green initiatives, greenways and da-da-da.
Yeah.
And there were complaints that some vital road infrastructure was not being built because of a kind of
an ideological
bias, you know, that let's not build more roads, let's build more cycleways. Now, has that imbalance been addressed?
It has been removed as a rule directly, which is, you know, I'm very happy to say, so it's gone. I think the intent was reasonably benign. The Green Party's point was, let's spend a load on public transport, not be worried about roads. But they put in an artificial measure where it had to be a 2-to-1 ratio.
Yeah. And meantime, a bypass didn't get built.
Yeah, and distortive things were happening, like, you know, over-engineering some cycling facilities and just in looks to the punter as if it's just in order to make them expensive. It was a silly rule. Measure how effective you're delivering cycling infrastructure and do lots more of it. But an artificial rule like that was a bad idea, and it is gone, thankfully.
Yeah, because some projects probably got built because the money was available, and they should not have been built.
And because they counted as a sustainable, in inverted, they counted because they weren't roads, so money got thrown at them. And that's just, you know, it's not a sensible way to allocate your resources. So it's good that that rule is gone.
Now, in terms of things that we've been looking for example, you know, good bypass in Galway for years, and then there were obviously environmental considerations that delayed that project. It eventually will go ahead. But you are quoting a Canadian idea that allows you really to run a coach and four through environmental rules if the national interest demands it. Now, that's a kind of a dangerous enough concept.
You can hear the lawyers kind of rubbing their hands together even as we speak. But there are certain countries where just the nature of the law, like your Napoleonic or non-civil canon of law, means that it's relatively easy to do large projects. So Spain, for example, when Barcelona wanted to do the Olympics or Madrid needed a metro, their planning laws make it much easier for them to do. We, like the Brits, like the Americans, like a lot of other jurisdictions, we can't seem to build anything at the moment. So the Canadian idea was that certain key projects could be designated as of national importance, and that would circumvent a lot of the planning. I think we could do that here. There was another example, I think, from California, whereby if it was a brownfield site, that obviated a lot of the environmental studies or aesthetic studies that would otherwise have to be done.
I mean, a brownfield site has been built upon before, and therefore, although there will be wildlife on it, there'll be rats and squirrels and whatever else.
Look, if it's currently a disused factory, don't come talking to me about the snails in order to delay a development.
Even if the bats have decided to make it their home because it's been empty for 20 years.
Yeah, exactly. And look, you know, whatever about bats and snails, without being facetious. We have to make sure that when we decide to build something, we can do it at a reasonable pace. Everybody knows that the frustration that we have at the moment is not the availability of cash. It's the slow process of planning and not hearing enough about how that logjam is going to be unpicked.
Conor Faulkner, transport commentator and consultant to the RIAC. Conor, thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.